Welcome to another edition of the Gaming Gang Extra. This time I'm joined by Byron Collins, the man behind Collins Epic War Games, as we discuss Spearpoint 1943 and its expansion currently on Kickstarter, the upcoming War Patrol, Silent Victory in the Pacific, Polyversal, and all things CEW. And in case you need the reminder, I'm your host, Jeff McAleer. Hi, Byron. Thank you for joining me today to talk a bit about Collins Epic War Games. How's it going?
Good. How you doing, Jeff? Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Trying to stay warm out here. It's been a little bit chilly for Arizona lately.
You know, it's about 65 today here in Virginia, which is really odd. Very odd.
You got us beat.
It's been pretty nice the past couple of days. I can't complain.
This morning we were about 32 degrees. Which, yeah, I'm from Chicago originally, so that doesn't bother me, but I know a lot of people were freaking out about it. So,
yeah.
Hey, don't worry, it's just for a day or two. We'll get back to 70 degrees in the afternoon and things like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to bring you on. First, I just wanted to mention that the Frontline General Spearpoint 1943 that Elliot and I were first exposed to at Origins was actually pretty much the game that we were impressed with most that we weren't familiar with when we went to the show. So I wanted to say congrats on that.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And for y'all's review, I mean, you did a nice review and seemed to really enjoy it. So it was great meeting you guys at Origins last year, and I hope you'll be there again this year coming up.
We're planning on it. We're hoping to a few more shows actually this year than we did last year. So we did Origins and Gen Con, and I did ConSim World out here in Arizona. And Elliot hits the Chicago Coin Game Fair.
Mm-hmm.
But we plan on hitting a few more. So you might run into us more than one time.
Awesome. Very good.
I wanted to have you on for a few different reasons. Number one, I know you have a Kickstarter project that's going on, which is an expansion to Frontline General Spearpoint 1943. I'll probably end up referring to it as just Spearpoint.
Sure.
Which actually brings brand new wrinkles to the game. And you have some other things that are in the hopper as well. But first off, what I wanted to ask is, how did you get started in the gaming industry?
Into the industry was really kind of, I didn't really know it existed beyond Axis and Allies. I didn't know wargaming was out there. I mean, I was the typical mass market purchaser of Axis and Allies or whatever, and then got into it from there as on the board game side. But, you know, really into history and World War II and most of our games are historical based, you know, that's kind of been, that stemmed from, you know, having veterans in the family, you know, who went through World War II. And my dad was a Marine. My grandfather was in the Army Air Corps. He was a ball turret gunner in a B-24. Let's see, my uncle was a Naval Reserves commander, and he was responsible for planning the small boat portions, the LCVP landing loadouts and everything for D-Day. And yeah, that was really cool. So I think that kind of sparked me to get into games, historical games specifically. And then then the second part was figuring out that they existed. That's hard. I mean, honestly, I mean, as a young guy growing up that's exposed to what you see in stores or what you see maybe other people playing, which for me, that was video games and it was those types of things. But I mean, first real war game as a board game would be Axis and Allies. And the first real war game in general that I played would have been Wings of Fury, which was a Apple IIc computer game that ran on a 5 1/4 floppy and was just awesome. And it was a World War II game where you were piloting a carrier plane and you were the lone pilot left on that carrier, and you were carrying out attacks against islands and ships and stuff. It was a lot of fun.
And so those graphics were in 1080p, right?
Oh, yeah, they were just state-of-the-art, you know. I mean, it's almost virtual reality. It was unbelievable.
I got my start with a VIC-20, so I remember back in the day where it was sort of like, wow, you know, oh, I can't believe, you know, these graphics are so awesome. And it's any gamer nowadays who grew up with console gaming would think,
oh, yeah,
you're out of your mind. How could you possibly play these games?
Yeah.
But it wasn't all visual. at that time. It was what laid beneath. There was a lot underneath in the game engine, I guess.
Sure. Right. You know, that goes into design. I mean, when you distill it down, a game that has the best graphics in the world, as far as video games can be, the least fun. I mean, there's just nothing to it versus a game like that. I still have really fond memories of hitting escape to pause it while my dad takes over so that we can continue going toward the high score. And there was no save. Turn it, the power went out and you're done. You know, it was fun, you know, but... You know, friends and I were like, we saw these toys that came out. They were actually Micro Machines.
The military ones, right?
Right, the military series. And that's really where we were like, you know what? We could use these in a game and just make a game on the tabletop with it. And here we are kind of on our own thinking up tabletop miniature gaming and had no clue that it even existed already, you know, elsewhere. It was huge. And then did research and everything. We started getting into it. I'm like, you know what? This is kind of cool. So then just went from there, learning what was out there and continuing to develop that, which eventually became its own board game and actually a campaign system for miniatures, which was my first game, which was Frontline General Italian Campaign Introduction. And that was a pretty ambitious game that is a lot more complex than what you're familiar with Spearpoint, but it got us started. So
I know Elliot and I did see that set up at Origins at your booth, and it looked like it was Die Hard Ragnarok Fest, which
it's a bit daunting.
Love that. Elliot, probably not so much. Many of our listeners might not be into that level of detail. They don't want to drill down that
long. Sure. Right.
Now, that's still available, isn't it?
Yeah, I still have copies. It was a low print run, so it's not a whole lot. You know, that was my first game. I didn't want to be the one of those horror stories with 20 years later, I've got 5,000 copies left or something. But no, I only printed around 500 copies, and most of those are gone. That game actually got us distribution deals. I think distributors saw that, and they're like, here you are starting off. And my first convention as an exhibitor was Gen Con, which is crazy. I mean, that's just insane.
That game.
It was, I mean, just mistake after mistake as a publisher, but you know, you learn from all that and you get better as you go. But that was my first sales and my first customers were at Gen Con, which was pretty cool. I mean, there was still enough war gamers there that we broke even. A small 10x10 booth in the middle of nowhere in the convention hall, and we actually came out breaking even, which I was very happy with, considering the costs of Gen Con. So that was back in 08. So that was my first release, and that was a big learning experience. I mean,
good and bad, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. But all for the better of me as a publisher and as a designer. So definitely an enjoyable thing. But that audience, we're already in a niche, which is wargaming. And then you go into a further niche, which is board wargamers or miniatures wargamers who want a campaign system. That's a niche within a niche. So it's kind of a small audience. And in hindsight, I think it would have been better to start out with something simpler like Spearpoint as the first game. But you know, that's how it is. So Spearpoint grew out of that. And that was basically how Spearpoint came along, is the combat system was kind of evolved and extracted from that first game and then developed into its own standalone card war game, which is very fast playing. And, you know, 30 minutes for one game, quick and dirty. A lot of people describe it as a light war game filler. I mean, with one sheet of rules, it's pretty easy to pick up and teach to pretty much anybody. And there's a lot of replayability with the deck build element in there. So,
and for those who aren't familiar with the game, it is card-based, but you're also rolling dice as well to determine attacks and things of that sort. We thought that it was pretty interesting design. We really enjoyed it. I still get to play it time to time, and I know Elliot plays it with one of his sons. I'll have to check, because last I heard, he had yet to win.
Nice.
Not unusual.
Nice.
Unless Elliot's playing me at something, then usually.
No, you're just being really nice right now to him.
Well, it's payback for all the years of me picking his tail around. So.
Spearpoint has been a really successful game for me, which has been awesome. I mean, it's been a great experience to print that game in the quantity that we did, which was 10 times that of the first game. And we've sold through over 1,000 copies of that, which is great for a war game. I mean, especially a small publisher. And with that game, we've grown our distribution network to Canada, the UK, 3 in the US, and 1 in Germany. And we're working on Italy Italy and some other places now. But yeah, that's been awesome to grow those business relationships too with other publishers, with convention goers, Gamma, I mean, places like that, distributors, ACD, Alliance, SDVM in the UK, all these people. It's been really fun. And that is the reason I would say that Fairpoint has really been our break-in game or our breakthrough, you know, as a publisher. So.
And now that's spun off into a Kickstarter project for a terrain expansion.
Right. Yes. And the game plays as is. Great. I mean, it's fine. It's Fairpoint is its own game. You can still play it like that. But some players want to get a little more deeply into the game. I heard the comment a lot given demos. Well, gosh, this would be really cool if you had some terrain. Then I took that and ran with it and said, all right, well, okay, we can do this. And so the core combat system is the same. It's the same three main phases. We just add a phase for movement. And so now some of the things that we were abstracting with the basic Spearpoint game is line of sight and terrain and movement and so forth. We've now added that in for players that love Spearpoint and want to take it a little further and go a little more deep into the tactical decisions that you can have with it. So it's kind of odd that we're taking card game and kind of turning it into a board game, but it works. And the other cool thing is, I don't think I've mentioned it to you, but the terrain boards that we do, they're mounted and the terrain sets up dynamically. So the tiles, which are 4 inches square, are pretty large and they have all the info you need on them for line of sight and for some other cool things. And what it feels like when you play it is it feels like a miniatures game.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And a lot of players have said that. So when they sit down and play a demo, first, all the demos we've done over the past year at conventions have all been positive. Everybody who plays it ends up pre-ordering it, really. I mean, I don't think anybody didn't pre-order it after they played it, which was great. It's a great compliment and testament to it. But the simple things we added just take it a step further and goes a bit deeper for those who want to go a bit deeper. And some people are fine with it as is, and that's totally cool. Keep it as a portable card war game filler. Great. The game has front lines and rear lines for where you lay your cards out. And in the map expansion, both players' front lines are replaced by a terrain board. And on top of that board are terrain tiles, which are different things, whether they be a bunker or the church or a building or whatever. It sets up differently. Even the same scenario will set up with like a different village layout, for example, in an Italian village. So it's got two sides to the map, an Italian village on the front and an Italian defensive line on the flip side. We're kind of modeling that based on like a typical small Italian village the Allies and Germans fought through, and then a typical defensive line in Italy, which there were many of them as we fought up the boot, and all of them were tough. I mean, the Gustav line, the Hitler line, I mean, there's just a myriad of these defensive lines as the Germans fell back. But so it's pretty interesting to play that out now with using the same cards, the same components, and now you add that terrain in there, and it just feels like a whole different game. We've got it on Kickstarter right now, and the whole goal with that is that's kind of experimental for us too, is to kind of bridge the gap. We've already been taking pre-orders with like a P500 system,
sure,
and we've been bridging the gap now with Kickstarter to get into production sooner because it's ready to go, and we thought that the wider audience that Kickstarter could provide could really jumpstart. If we're successful with that campaign, which ends in 1 month, I think it ends December 8th, December 6th.
January 6th?
January 6th. January
8th. Today?
No, not today. Thank goodness, because we would fail. No, but the goal is to raise the amount that we need that's outstanding to pay for the print run. And then if we can do that, then we're going to print in January.
You had mentioned that the tiles are dual-sided. Aren't there also tiles included in the set that are going to effectively work with an upcoming Spearpoint Eastern Front?
That's correct, yes. The winter defensive line could easily be an Eastern Front setting. I mean, there's no doubt. It looks like the Eastern Front is set in winter, and it gives that look. It could be easily a Russian setting. So what I should also mention is that the map expansion is also an expansion for an upcoming second base set, which by the second base set, I mean all new cards, and that's Spearpoint 1943 Eastern Front, which we're in the kind of the design stages on that. We're pretty early on it, but it's going to add all new German cards, all new Russian cards, and it'll be basically a standalone Russian-German conflict fast-playing card war game, just like the basic game. And you can take that as well. You can take that further by using the same map expansion. So it's an expansion for two games. And with that, what we're going to do is release scenarios specific for the Eastern Front set for the map expansion once Eastern Front comes out. So that'll be a little down the line, but yeah, fully compatible with both of those base sets.
Speaking of down the line, I understand you also have some designs that are on the horizon that have nothing to do with the Frontline General series.
Correct. Yes, we're breaking out of that a bit, and we're continuing to develop some of the Spearpoint line with now some external designers even. We've got Robert Smith is helping us with Spearpoint 1943 Eastern Front with some of his expertise. He has done a lot of reviews for Panzer Digest, and a really smart guy, Lieutenant Colonel Robert Smith. He's a really nice guy, but he's worked at the Army Center of Military History and so forth, so he's got a lot of good historical knowledge, military matters and so forth. So we've got him helping us with the Eastern Front. And then we've also got Jim Day, who did a lot of games for Avalon Hill and some other companies in the day. And he's helping us with a Cold War version of Spearpoint. It's going to be pretty cool. It's a Spearpoint 1987. And that's going to be, again, a card-based conflict based on a hypothetical conflict between some forces in 87 during the Cold War. So Eastern European hypothetical. But pretty cool stuff. So Abrams tank is on the cover. I mean, that kind of thing. So I'm pretty excited to be working with Jim. I mean, he's a veteran designer. He did Panzer. He did MBT and some other games, Kaiser's Pirates and some other cool stuff. So he's a really nice guy too. So
he's one of the newest additions to the hundreds of employees that Collins Epic War Games has.
Yeah. If I were to hire him, we would double our employees. But no, he's, we work with external designers with contracts just like artists. Yeah. And we're also working with, on the World War II front again, we're working with a designer. We really haven't mentioned his name or really even the game's title, so I'll do that here for the first time. We're doing a submarine game, and it's based on the Pacific Theater, and it's the U.S. submarines, our fleet boats, against Japanese shipping. And the title of the game is going to be War Patrol, Silent Victory in the Pacific, which is kind of a nod to the book on the subject called Silent Victory, which is a well-known book about our sub operations against Japan. So, but anyway, the designer of that game is Jeff Daugherty, and he's been a lead playtester with some other games. I think Fires of Midway and some other cool stuff. But so Jeff has got this passion project that we're picking up, and this War Patrol, it just plays awesome. I mean, I got to look at the prototype and evaluated it and just really caught the bug. I mean, for submarine history, really started digging deep into it. What's neat about it is we're going to be using some primary references that are declassified references from the U.S. Navy. Pretty cool, because those have been only recently declassified, so they haven't been used as a basis for a game, to my knowledge.
Until now.
Yeah, until now. So we're gonna really dig into that resource and start, really diving into, no pun intended, diving into the game. So the U.S. fleet submarine operations in World War II between 42 and 45, and it's a fun game. It's on a tactical basis too. So you are basically the CO of, you're the CO of a single sub, and you're going out on war patrols against the Japanese. So to be successful, you've got to manage your boat, the systems, crew, and basically I hope you don't get sunk while you're out there, seeking out and pursuing targets. So it's pretty cool.
And just from the look of it, from the American viewpoint, that's a little different, because normally most games that feature submarines tend to always be something along the lines of the Germans.
There's a big love out there for a big fascination, I should say, I guess, with the German U-boats and their operations against the Allies. But at the same time, I don't know. In my opinion, it's been done. You know what I mean? It's and why focus on U-boats so much? And when there's a lot of rich history that happened right here from the U.S. perspective in the Pacific. I mean, we were very successful against Japanese shipping, and that was a huge impact to the war against Japan and World War II. I mean, it's amazing how much of an effect it had when you start reading into the history of it all. So I think it's neat to really try to model that and get into it on the historical side. And then also for me, you know, I'm learning a lot about it. Jeff and his dad are both, I would say, pretty much experts on it. But, you know, when I accepted to publish it, I just really have started diving in myself and getting pretty deep with the historical basis for it. And it's just been really cool. So I can say it's going to be an awesome game. We've got Mark von Marschall is a German artist. He's going to be working on some of the artwork. We've already got him working on the box art for it and so forth. So we're moving along.
And he does a lot of work with Lock and Load, doesn't he?
Yes, and he actually did all of the art for the Spearpoint map expansion as well. He did a great job. Our next Kickstarter update will be an interview with Mark, which will go through his process for creating this awesome art for the game. So, yeah, it's pretty neat.
Is Silent Victory going to be a solo game? Is it multiple players, two players?
It is going to be 1 to 4 players, each controlling their own fleet sub. So
everyone's playing on the side of the U.S.?
Yes.
Okay.
That's great. Yeah, it's pretty cool, though. Yeah, 1 to 4 players is going to play really well solo, as I've found so far, but it's also very much a cooperative game as well.
And you have other titles that are on the horizon, maybe further out.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. We're working on... this is really a departure for me, but you know, something I've really always enjoyed and loved is a sci-fi game we're working on called Polyversal. And this is a game by Ken Whitehurst. He's been in the industry for a while. He's been involved with Tabletop Gaming News. He did his own podcast for a while called This Week in Wargaming. And actually on Twitter, his feed is Weekly Wargamer, and he always posts some cool stuff. So if you want to follow him there. But yeah, Ken's a really passionate guy as well. I mean, this is his design and he's been working on for years, and Polyversal is going to be a really cool mass combat miniatures game. It's a sci-fi 6mm miniatures game. So we're looking at a scale that's small enough where you can show on a table just massive, scale, essentially. So, and even slightly larger scales with some types of units and so forth. It's kind of cool with Polyversal because it's a universal rule set. I guess you could compare it kind of to a Dirt Side 2, which would be kind of a precursor to Polyversal. But what we're doing is taking it a bit further than Dirt Side did, even where Dirt Side would let you design your own stat cards, essentially. And we're doing something similar with Polyversal, so people can use stuff they already have. You don't have to go buy our miniatures because we're not going to make miniatures, you know, for instance. But we are also working with already 4 at the moment so far. I can't yet announce, but we've got contracts in progress on IP usage, all kinds of cool stuff. So what we're going to be doing is working with those guys to actually include some of their miniatures in some sets for Polyversal. So you'll see like a base set that'll have a mixture of miniatures from different manufacturers that work with the game and is fully compatible with the story and everything. And we're gonna have some good background story with it. It's kind of a near future, plausible future, so not Star Wars far, far out type stuff.
Sure.
It's actually kind of believable, so it's kind of cool.
It wasn't Star Wars a long, long time ago?
Yeah. Yeah, trying to stay in this galaxy, I guess, would be the difference.
Sure. And 6mm is a great scale. I used to play quite a bit of Warhammer 40K Epic,
mm-hmm.
and you can put together some really nice size armies. Looks great, and it's not going to put you in the poorhouse trying to field an army either.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, the 6mm is pretty affordable, and there's a lot of great manufacturers out there. I mean, that Ken was introducing me to, and we started contacting him and saying, hey, you want to work with us on this? And so far, so good with a lot of cool guys. I mean, small companies, medium companies as far as size. And you know, these are also pretty passionate individuals. I mean, they're sculpting these miniatures that are just awesome. And we're looking to bring out the highlights of each of those lines. And it's good for them, too, because we're going to be giving them a lot of exposure with including those miniatures in our game to people who can then explore that line further, for example, or whatever. But it's a fun game. I mean, let me give you one example of how fun it is and how fun Ken approaches it at a convention in Williamsburg. That's when I first saw the game. He was running a game of it, And it was just a homebrew set. That's all it was labeled as, is Polyversal. And so he's running a game. And I saw this thing from a distance. I had to come up and investigate, because I'm looking at this thing. Oh, what has he done? And I look, and it was drawing attention, you know. So, of course, I walk over and was like, wow, this is cool. I'm not going to say this is going to be in the game necessarily, right. But he had made, for his miniatures set up on his game table, he had made a teleporter. And it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. But how he did it was even more creative. And this is the type of guy I'm working with. He took an old Mr. Coffee.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A Mr. Coffee maker.
Sure.
And just kit bashed it and tore it apart and put one of those science balls, you know, that you touch and it electrifies you and all this stuff.
Right.
Into the Mr. Coffee in the place of the coffee decanter. Hooked that thing up, plugged it in, and called it Mr. Teleporter. And I was like, this is so awesome. And so, you know, some units would get near it, and they would just, he would be like, all right, they appear over here. Now they're on the other side of the map, or whatever, you know, they get to the teleporter, or that's the objective. But, I mean, that was just one game he was running, but, I mean, that's the kind of creativity that I'm pleased to be working with regarding Ken. He's a cool guy, and he's an actual lawyer by trade, so the rules are pretty tight.
Don't you play a lot of miniatures yourself locally?
Yeah, and I'm in Eastern Virginia, and there's a great group called ODMS, which is Old Dominion Military Society. They've been around for a while. I mean, a number of years. They go to a lot of the miniatures conventions, like Historicon and, you know, the HMGS conventions in Pennsylvania, and they're actually running their own conventions now in Williamsburg, which are awesome. They're just a lot of fun, and the guys are great. Some names that come to mind, Chuck Ternitza and Carl, and so, you know, all these guys in Hampton that get together, they play, you know, every week. 4 days out of the week, their place called The Hangar, which is basically a garage that's just enormous, is just full of gaming, and it's just an awesome place to go. I mean, you just go hang out and play some games, and it's not really a game store or anything. I mean, he runs a store online, but it's, you know, we go and hang out and have a good time and play a bunch of miniature games, and there's board games, too, that come out occasionally, and even some Euros will be played. I mean, but primarily they're historical war gamers or sci-fi or whatever they want to play. I mean, it's pretty neat. You go in there any given night, it's a different game.
Is there anything else that is in development right now at Collins Epic War Games that you could mention?
Oh, wow. That's, I think, a pretty full plate. And we're trying to manage all, I mean, I'm trying to manage all that. I say we, it's just me, you know, and I always include the artists and the designers and everything. That makes it we, so, you know, but primarily it's just me managing all this.
At least you're not referring to yourself in the third person.
Not yet. And when I do, my wife's going to put an end to it all. I'm done. Yeah.
One last question that I would ask, and I try to ask this of everybody. When I say we, I mean Elliot and I.
At least it's two people, actually, right?
What are some of the games that you enjoy playing that you have no affiliation whatsoever with?
Well, some of the miniatures games come to mind, and a lot of those are homebrew rules or whatever at ODMS, or just whatever I get into over there is kind of cool. I like some of the Euros because I can play them with my wife. I mean, that's a lot of fun. So we'll play Agricola, or we'll play Ticket to Ride or something like that, you know, because she likes those games. So we'll play stuff like that. Other games, I like the Conflict of Heroes series. I'm friends with Ova, so I can't say I'm not affiliated. I'm not a, you know, there's no business affiliation there. But
friends with someone that, I mean, you could say, yeah, I enjoy playing Lock and Load. You don't work for Lock and Load.
Right.
Just because you're friends with Mark Walker doesn't mean you can't enjoy his games.
Yeah, and he's got some cool games. Since you mentioned it, yeah, Mark got a good game out that he published called Space Infantry, which is just great. I mean, it's a solo game. It's a sci-fi solo game, and it's just a lot of fun. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, Elliot reviewed that. He enjoyed it.
Oh, okay.
It's great. On our site.
Power Grid. I think Power Grid is an excellent game. It's a Euro that, have you ever heard of that? The Rio Grande game.
Have I ever heard of Power Grid?
I hope you've heard of it, right?
Of course.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, I mentioned to some people, and they're like, oh, what's that?
You forget. We run a gaming site. Yeah, of course.
That's true. Yeah, I'm talking to the masters, right?
No, well, not the masters, but we're familiar.
Yeah. So, yeah, Power Grid, that's a classic with me. I really enjoyed teaching that and playing it. So gaming primarily for me is testing. You know, I'm constantly testing or working or designing, and so when I can sit down and play a game, it's usually not my own. I consider it work, you know. I'm testing.
Right, sure,
you know, so when I sit down with my wife, you know, we like to play something else, like completely external, even from war games, you know, Ticket to Ride or Power Grid or whatever. So,
I mean, I understand. It's the same with me. I don't watch pornography because, you know, that's the industry I'm in. So, yeah.
What? Wait a minute.
Well, that's my real job. No.
Oh, okay. Oh, my goodness. You're scared.
Yeah, trust me. I'd be scared if somebody hired me. Any last thoughts about Colin's epic war games you'd like to share with our listeners?
Two things come to mind. One, we're working on a new website. It's called collinsepicwargames.com, and it's in testing mode right now. So if you go there, you're just going to get a message that says we're in testing. I mean, it'll refer you to frontlinegeneral.com. The other thing I'd like to mention is that we actually are now also supporting a charity, which is a veterans charity for U.S. veterans. So we started supporting something called Homes for Our Troops, which is a cool charity.
I've seen that.
Yeah. They build houses, you know, that are accessible for veterans returning from, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, whatever, and sure, that all of a sudden don't have the mobility they had due to some severe injury, you know, or whatever during the course of battle. So it's a really good charity, and they're doing well with it, and they're getting a lot of good exposure. And we donate $1 per game that we sell. It's kind of neat to support that.
That is very cool and very commendable.
It's good. It's worth it. So it's, those are, I guess, the two things that come to mind. The only other thing I can think of is if you want to really help us out, check out that Kickstarter campaign. I'm sure, I mean, you've got the ads up on thegaminggame.com, and I know it refers over to there. And I urge everybody to check that video out. It's got a project video that goes over that expansion. That's our most immediate project that we're trying to get through. So
you have a package on there as well if someone doesn't already have Frontline General Spear Point 1943, mm-hmm. They can sign up. It's not a donation, so I mean they're pledging effectively,
mm-hmm.
But
right,
they can get the original game and the terrain tiles together, right?
Correct. That's correct. Yeah, and both at a discount. I mean, you've got a 20% off essentially on both of them just for doing the pre-order. And some other cool rewards on that we came up with, and one we just added, is for anything $20 and above, you get your name in the rules as a supporter, a written letter of thanks, and we've also added an 18x24 poster of the box art that includes names of all the P500 and Kickstarter supporters. So then there's also from level 3 and on, which is like a reward 3 and on. If you see the rewards on the side, it's basically you get the game and it's a signed copy, and you also get a custom line of sight tool, which is basically a tape measure that miniature gamers use, you know, a lot. We have our logo on that. We're getting custom made, and you know, it's shipped anywhere in the U.S. and all that, and the poster and all the, you know, your name and the rules and all that good stuff. All that is $54, including shipping. So it's I think a good value. And then the next level up is the one that includes the base game with the expansion, and all that's included as well, and all the above. Yeah, and at the top level, which is kind of interesting, we created one pledge that is basically a limited reward where Mark is actually of Lock and Load. He's doing the fictional introductions for each of the scenarios in the game, which is kind of neat. And so the top level has all of the above, plus Mark will actually work your name into the scenarios as a character, which is, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of cool. So if you want to, Elliot, signed up for that, you know, Sergeant
following
Elliot.
Following a devastating blunder. No, that'd be me.
Yeah, we're trying to be really creative with the Kickstarter campaign. It's kind of new to us, and we're giving it a shot. So
excellent. And yeah, for listeners and people who visit the website or readers, they know I'm not the biggest fan of Kickstarter.
Okay.
Simply because too many companies have jumped on the bandwagon that really don't belong on Kickstarter. These are companies that are established.
Sure.
And but Kickstarter really is for companies like your own.
I think so. And publishers. Yeah, and actually I've got a blog where I'm starting to talk about that a bit called, it's on Board Game Geek. It's called Publisher Perspective, if you want to follow it. But it's, I just posted something about Kickstarter and running a campaign. And I'm thinking Kickstarter.com has got some great tips on how to run a campaign and how to make it successful and how to create a great video and how to, you know, market yourself a bit. But it's not just that. I mean, it's a lot of hard work that goes into it beyond just throwing a project up and hoping for the best. So yeah, I'm actually starting to talk about some of my lessons learned already on the way. And some of this, you know, I'm familiar with just with what I do with my first, what I've done with my first two games. But I honestly cannot imagine if I were in a position where I'd never published anything and I threw my game design up on Kickstarter and it got funded. Some of these projects are drawing 30,000, 80,000. I mean, it's crazy.
Sure.
And you never know what's going to happen. And if that is the case for you and you're a designer and you push your project on Kickstarter and it's successful, now what? You know, is what I would be thinking, because my goodness, it's a lot more to it than people really understand when they get into production of a game. And it's that execution part where your reputation's on the line that you've got to worry about and do right, you know. And I mean, the design part really honestly is the easy part, in my opinion, for game publishing. The publishing part is where it gets really tricky. And Kickstarter is a great site. I mean, in my opinion, I think it's a cool concept, the crowdfunding and
most definitely.
And all.
I think it really is a cool website. I think in a lot of ways it can be very helpful for the hobby, but in other ways it's also a hindrance.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I wish people best of luck when they put a project on there, but at the same time, I would, if it were me, just personally, I'd be scared to death, you know, if I didn't really, you know, there's a lot to think about that people don't quite understand, I think, and they put up a hobby game, a hobby design that they've worked on for years or whatever, maybe even similar to myself years ago, my first game, I mean, I may have done the same, and then you get up there and you get the funding, and then one is, okay, where's your production sources? I mean, how do you know who to rely on? And two is, where's your distribution network? Because you're going to have a lot of extra games that you didn't sell through Kickstarter that are going to be sitting in your garage, and you don't want to be that guy with 2,000 games sitting in your garage. And you know,
you don't
want
to be Flying Buffalo Games now.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot to think about beyond just getting the funding, and I hope people are really taking that seriously. Even just the business aspects, the tax implications. I mean, there's a lot to it. So yeah, to me, it's a cool site. It's a neat concept. It's just intimidating for a first time, right? I mean, especially in the hobby game industry, I think the best approach that I've seen with it is people who approach Kickstarter with a publisher already backing them. And one example of that would be Larry Boguki with War Party, who just got a successful funding campaign through Kickstarter done. And War Party was a success because Larry was really working hard to push it. And he and I have talked about that a bit, and Mark and I have talked about it. But the good thing with Larry, you know, being this is his first game, but he's got Mark Walker behind it, right, ready to execute and ready to publish it and ready to go get it printed. And he knows where to go and knows what to do. And I'm not saying Larry couldn't do it, but my goodness, it's going to be a lot easier with that approach. So I urge anybody who's interested in Kickstarter as a way to get funding for their game, really think about approaching a publisher first and saying, look, here's my plan. I suggest that we go to Kickstarter. Here's the game and everything. Do you like it or whatever? And then if you can get that publisher behind you, then you can kind of lean on him or lean on that company to help you with the execution part. So anyway.
And to follow up on the promise that you've made to your support.
Right. Yeah. Your reputation goes on the line. As soon as you get those funds, people's credit cards are charged, and that's not taken very lightly, you know.
No.
If you don't follow through. So yeah.
Byron, you know that Ellie and I are right behind you. We support you 110% as far as your Kickstarter project.
I appreciate it.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking some time out. In fact, this is the second time we've talked. The first interview, there was an issue with the sound file. So
right.
The second time we've actually chatted about all things CEW, I guess we would say.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's it's been fun both times, really. I mean, I don't mind. So yeah, definitely appreciate the chance to kind of chat with you.
Fantastic. So the best to you and yours. I hope you guys enjoy a fantastic holiday season.
You too. Thanks very much.
Take care.
All right. Take care.
There you have it. Once again, a big thanks to Byron Collins for joining me and you really should check out Spearpoint 1943 and its expansion currently on Kickstarter. Thanks also to our sponsor, Victory Point Games, and to you, the listener, as well. And don't forget, join Elliot and I on our next scheduled show at thegaminggang.com.